So I have a crazy week. I have a horrible week. And some of you know some of the stories. So I do some work for a multinational, which will remain nameless because of the fact that we record this. And they owe me hundreds of thousands of rand. And they've got the money, but for all the various reasons, and it's bizarre. It's like every week there's another reason, you know, and some bizarre is, no, my son kicked his toe and we just didn't get time to process it. I mean, I'm being silly, but that's how silly these reasons are. So last week I decided, listen, and I texted the guy, I've got his cell phone number, and I said, my friend, if you don't do anything about this now, I'm gonna take this to a bit further and I'm going to go above your head. And of course he didn't respond, nothing happened, so I did that. And I've got one of the other guys who I know, who I emailed, and I said, listen, do you have authority here? Because it's been a long, long time, and I'm sitting here, I've got school fees outstanding, I've got all of this stuff, I've done the work, we've handed the reports in, and why are we not getting paid? And there just seems to be another reason after another reason after another reason. So there were two audits that I've done. So the one gets paid out literally within 24 hours, the money comes in. And it takes 48 hours because it had to come through the company that I work for to get into my account. So at least on Saturday, I was able to pay some bills and get some stuff done. But now there's another one, almost 200,000 rand still outstanding. Some of which relates to an audit I did in December last year when I handed the report in. So I say to the guy, you know, when are we going to pay? And I keep going. And then all of a sudden, he gets wind of the fact that I've gone above his head, and all hell breaks loose. Now, you can imagine in those moments, and we've all been in them, it's a he said, you said, and I didn't say, and you said this, and you said this, and this guy's gone and got all these emails, but he's only picked the ones that are the ones that he's trying to, you know, half-truths, and trying to show that he's, you know, just cover face and cover all those kind of things. And so it got to about Wednesday where, you know, when you kind of start to dream about, you know, tearing somebody's arm and smacking them with a wet end type thing, and I'm seething with anger. And so now I realize, okay, actually, I've got to prepare a preach for Sunday. So I go into my study, and I've got this process that I've got till the end of the year. As you know, we've been doing the Sermon on the Mount. We finished off the Beatitudes, Sermon on the Mount. And I sit down, and lo and behold, I'm preaching on anger this morning. So I say, really, God? He says, yes, it's time to deal with those things that are in your heart. So on Thursday night, we had dinner with Bruce and Alicia, and they tell us this crazy story. You know, they've been married a year. They've just moved into a home about 6 months ago, 8 months ago, up here in Four Ways. And their bathroom en suite, they start to just kind of see this water and lots of these black little worms, and there's like the smell that starts, and it's just like, what is going on here? They get a couple of contractors in, and I'm probably even going to miss and overemphasize some of the facts, so please forgive me, Bruce and Alicia, but you can tell them a story if somebody wants to ask you the details. And they've got pictures. We were trying to show you the pictures because it's bizarre. And so water wasn't draining out their basins and all kinds of stuff. And what had happened was, at the back end of their bathroom ensuite, there was a wall, and one of the contractors said, can I just break a little hole in that wall? Just because there's something behind here. They said, no, go for it. So they break a hole, and it turns out that the previous owners or whatever it was there was a little alcove of a shower that had literally just been bricked up. So they decided, oh, we don't want this piece, so they bricked it up. But the problem was, with all the water, there was a break in the pipe, was starting to drain, and the shower, which was probably about 1.5 by 1.5 meters, had just filled up with water. And there were these black worms, and they've even got video of it. It's disgusting. And mosquitoes and rats and all kinds of stuff that have developed into this part of their bathroom. Now, on one level, it's all of these things, but let's kind of take that metaphor, and I want to ask you this morning, what parts of your heart have you bricked up? God, you're not going to see this. My friends, my family, my wife, my kids, I'm going to brick this up so because you can't see this. But what happens when we do that is we create that alcove just like what happened with the previous owners of their home, and all of the stuff starts to seep in, and there must have been water, am I lying? 1.5 meters deep of cesspool of water. When we do that with God, when we break up parts of our heart before God and before others, what happens is exactly that. It starts to become a cesspool, and it starts to impact and affect our whole lives. The beautiful thing is I would have shown you a picture of what their bathroom looks like now. Like on one level, Louise says, who would want a smaller bathroom? We always had a small bathroom, like throughout our lives. Up until recently, about 2 years ago, we decided, no, you know what? We want a big bathroom. We've got a lovely bathroom now. But why would you want to make a smaller bathroom? And what happened was insurance paid out, and they've got a magnificent large bathroom now with a shower. Now, remember, that thing, that it's literally bricked it up. You could walk in there and have a shower if you wanted to afterwards, pretty much. Hey? Water was still running, hot, cold, They didn't even stop the pipes. How bizarre is that? Exactly, how bizarre. I think there's a song about that. Now, here's the thing is that, so anger rises within all of us. And I know some of us have those things, but what starts to happen is it's not the call center that calls you that gets the full impact of it, is it? It's not the shop assistant, it's not the person at the garage. It's your wife or your husband or your kids or those close to you. And that's the problem is it starts to become this seething anger that starts to impact every part of our lives, our work colleagues and so forth. So poor old Dale and Paul and Charmaine often get this challenge that I have. Matthew chapter 5 verse 25, you have heard it said to the people long ago, you shall not murder. And anyone who murders is subject to judgment. Now the interesting part of this is it's the way the rabbinical kind of spoken teachings would work. What would happen was you'd be a rabbi who would stand up and say, here's a text in the Old Testament. So you've heard it said. In this case, he's taking Exodus chapter 20, verse 13, and he's saying, Moses came with the Ten Commandments. Here's number 6, thou shalt not murder. And then he says, and in the rest of the Torah, in terms of Leviticus and other places like that, it describes what the implications are if you murder. So maybe it's manslaughter. Maybe it is like premeditated murder. The Bible has specific steps as to what's going to happen. So Jesus is saying, in a rabbinical way, you have heard it said, and he starts to unpack this in a way, and he says, well, you will face judgment if you murder. So I think we're all happy. I don't know if there's any murderers in here. I don't know, maybe you've accidentally killed somebody or eaten your child. I know that's kind of a thing these days. But the point is that to say, oh, I don't murder, I'm okay. It's doable. I think I can, despite, look, maybe not the taxis on the road, but the point is that there's part of me that I can go, and part of you will go, oh, that's easy. I can do that. It's not a problem. But what Jesus starts to do is he starts to pull out. Remember a couple of weeks ago I shared on, unless your righteousness exceeds that of the Pharisees and the scribes, he starts to now pull this down and he says, yo, you can tick off the box. I'm sure all of us, if we had up there, or if we had this thing of, let me put this into play right now and say, well, in order to be a member of this church, you have to tick the box that you haven't murdered somebody. I think you could tick that box. Well, most of you. I don't know all of you, but possibly there are some that may not be. But I think we all could do that. I mean, think of Oscar Pistorius. We all look at him and we go, what a tonsil. How could he do that? How could he get into that place of murdering his girlfriend like that? What is wrong with that guy? I'm better than him. I don't do that. Let's leave that in our pipe and smoke it a bit later. So verse 22 says, but I tell you. So again, what the rabbinical thing would be is, you've heard it said, let me take this text, but now let me tell you. Let me show you the understanding. Let me interpret this text for you so that you can live out this way of life. You had rabbis like Shamil who would say, okay, you've heard this, but this is the way in which you live it out. This is how you do it. You got to do this, you got to do that. What does a Sabbath look like? Well, let me tell you what it looks like. So Jesus is saying, okay, you've heard it said, but let me tell you how it's going to work. And he gets behind the heart of it. He says, if anyone who is angry with his brother or sister, he will be subject to judgment. Okay, so, excuse me, on the face of this, if you're a murderer, the Torah says you will face judgment. Now Jesus is saying, no, hold on a second. Even if you are angry with your brother and sister, you will face judgment. The same judgment as a murderer. Oh, come on, are you kidding? Well, let's start to unpack this and let's start to understand what this is. Because I don't know about you, but if on the face of what I've just said is true, I'm in trouble. And I'm facing judgment because of my emotions during the week. What is anger? It's an emotion. It's not an action. So to say don't get angry is kind of a stupid thing, isn't it? Don't get angry. You know, I've got some highly vibrant, loving women in my family. And Louise and Jenna in particular are vibrant young ladies who have learned the art of momentary anger, which when I remember marrying Louise and the first time we had this fight and screaming, shouting, and slammed the door, we didn't have that in our home. My mom and dad were quiet. They kind of did it behind closed doors most of the time. So now all of a sudden there's this, what now? How do I deal with this? How do we deal with this anger that kind of, you know, just comes out? Because the problem is it's an emotion. It's not an action. Yes, it obviously comes into an action. But what we'll see
is that our emotions can be influenced by Jesus when we're with him. But Dad, if you put the next slide up, is the definition of anger really is that when my will is thwarted or frustrated or restrained, that's when anger starts up. So when I want something, as you can see, where somebody or something or whatever the case is, someone stops happening what I want to see happen. You see that in a toddler. I want. And when they don't get, I mean, there's Helen Lottie in her head, she understands that clearly, that the anger in a toddler, I want that, and my mom or my dad is stopping me from getting what I want, and so therefore I'm going to show them that they should give me what I want. But as adults, we're no different. And there's many types of anger. We have when our ego is wounded, isn't it? When our egos get wounded, maybe there's an injustice that we see, or some kind of oppression, like bullying. Now, something in me kind of breaks when I see bullying. And one thing in particular is in a swimming pool. If I see somebody dunk somebody, there's something that rises. Why? Because when I was a kid, somebody dunked me a few times. And not being able to breathe and being under the water, I know that feeling. And when that happens, there's kind of this reaction that I get angry. And so if I see adults doing that to children, I don't respond too well. So there's an example. But then there's also things in your past where something's happened to you. Maybe you've been abused. Maybe there's something that's happened where you've been bullied or whatever. And in another moment, like I've said, something rises within you and you become angry. Here's the thing about anger, though. It's not necessarily a sin. Because sometimes the mature response is to get angry. When a child is molested, we should be getting angry. Jesus got angry many, many times. Well, I want to say many, many times. A number of times throughout Scripture, it is shown that he gets angry. He literally goes and plats a whip and goes and smashes people in the temple courts. Not once, but twice. Paul says, be angry, but do not sin in your anger in Ephesians chapter 4, verse 26. Now, what Jesus is saying is don't get angry. But what he is showing, and let me see if I can get this thing starting to operate now, is what he is saying is, that, Dad, maybe you can need to help me, is that there's two words in Greek. And like I've said before many, many times, is in my studies of Greek, is that often what happens is there's a whole bunch of Greek words, but we just show it as one English word. So we've shown two English words, meaning one English word called anger. There's a word called thumos, as you can see there. That's the quick momentary anger that flares up. That's what I often experience in my household, especially from my female persuasions in my household. Us guys are just kind of laid back and we go, what? What just happened? But the point is that Louise and I, we were married a couple of years. We went out into Mildersdrift there. There was a place selling cottage pine furniture, and we were looking for some cottage pine furniture. And while we were there, the people that owned the place, and some of you have maybe heard me tell this story, is that they went out and they'd farmed a thatch. And as you know, it's literally grass. They got the thatch grass, and they were drying it out on these, and they'd put them together on a massive thing, probably as long as our venue here, like this, and like this deep, and it caught fire. And this woman came screaming, and it's on fire. We walked out, it had just started. I'm telling you, within 10, 20 seconds, it was an inferno that we couldn't get within 10 meters of. And then a few minutes later, there was nothing. That's what thumos is. Thumos means like, wah! Calm down to a panic. Okay. And then there's another word, which is what Jesus uses. It's called orge. And this is this deep-seated, like seething, kind of remaining angry. It's like carrying around angry. In fact, what he does is he uses the present participle. So if you're an English scholar, he uses a present participle, which is that you remain or that you are being angry, that you are continually being angry. And the problem with this is that you replay this thing in your mind all the time, and it starts to just become part of who you are, and you start to express it, and you start to do things out of it, and you land up killing yourself and the people around you. So what Jesus is saying is if you have orge, not if you have thumos, if you have orge, so thumos you can, wah, but then you can deal with it. But what happens often is thumos becomes orge, and you start to carry it around with you, and you start to carry an anger. And actually, you got the same judgment as a murderer as a result. So, what happens when we carry around orge? It leaks. Where does it leak? It leaks out of this thing. It gets onto my tongue. And I start to get sarcastic. And I start to throw out those little things. And I start to get hurtful in my comments. And I start to gossip and I start to slander. And then for some of you, you get onto Facebook and rant. Please don't do that. As a church pastor, you get an email. Can I say this again? And I'm going to say it again, and I'm going to say it again. If you have an issue with me or somebody in this community, please do not send an email. Come talk face to face. Don't lack the courage. Come and speak about those things. And we're going to get into some of those things in a moment. So then Jesus extends his thought. He says, again, anyone who says to his brothers and sisters, Raka. Now I want you guys to please stop saying Raka to each other, please. Is answerable to the court. And anyone who says, you fool, will be in danger of the fire of hell. Okay, so you can understand, this week when I'm reading this, I'm going, oh my word. I'm the pastor of a church and I'm here, I'm there. I'm in danger of the fire of hell. So Raka was an Aramaic word which actually means you stupid, dumb idiot. You empty head. Raka. Okay, sorry, Lord, you know I'm just saying. You're insulting somebody's intelligence. And what it says there is you will be in danger of going to court. Now, the court was the Sanhedrin at the time. It was Israel's kind of court system. So if you put it into our context now, it's like somebody saying, Dell, if you call somebody an idiot, I'm going to take you to the Supreme Court. You go, oh, really? Really? What a joke. I mean, how many of us have called somebody an idiot or whatever in this last week? Well, you know, the fact that we're not going to land up in the Supreme Court for doing that. But Jesus says, so you can, yeah, the people are starting to kind of go, oh, yeah, sure, you know. But then he goes on to say, well, don't call somebody a fool. And that's a Greek word called more, which we get our word moron from. So now what you're saying is, you know, you're unintelligent, immoral, whatever. And now what you're doing is you're not just insulting somebody's behavior, you're insulting them and their character. So Jesus is showing us this progression. You know, there's many scriptures in the Bible. One, Psalm 14, verse 1, it says, the fool says in his heart, there is no God. They are corrupt. They do abominable deeds. There is none who does good. And then there's my personal favorite, Proverbs 17, 28. Even a fool who keeps silent is considered wise. So maybe you are a fool here this morning. Rather just keep quiet. When he closes his lips, he is deemed intelligent. That's in the Bible. It's cool, eh? You just quote the scripture without telling them what they are. Proverbs 29:11. A fool gives full vent to his spirit, but a wise man quietly holds it back. Sometimes the best thing we can do is just keep quiet and not say anything. So the what we're saying here is that when we start in this process, you can see what's happened is I've got angry. I've threw myself, thrown my toys, but now I haven't dealt with it, and it's seething in my heart, and I'm starting to move on this way, and now it starts to spill over in my mouth, and I start to say things, and Raka, and you know, you moron, and you moron, and you this, and you that. And what he's saying is, no, if you are in that place, well, you're in a place where, well, ultimately, the fire of hell you're in danger of. I say to my kids often, you know, sometimes you hear kids say things, and they say, why did you say that? Oh, I didn't mean it. I heard adults say that. No, I didn't mean it. No, no, but you've said it. Out of the heart, the mouth speaks. So, now, the problem is once you say a negative thing, it takes you probably 100 times more to say positive things to overcome that negative thing. We need to watch what we say because you know what? Words shape our identity. Moms and dads, watch what you say to your kids. What are we speaking over our kids? And how are we saying those things? Because what happens is when we give anger its place, it becomes a cancer in our heart and we're in danger of the fire of hell. There's a quote from R.T. France, Dad, if you can put it up. It says, Jesus' pronouncement is thus that ordinary insults may betray an attitude of contempt, which God takes extremely seriously. The unexpected conclusion in hellfire comes as a shocking jolt to the complacency of the hearer, who may have chuckled over the incongruent image of a person being tried at the Supreme Court for anger or for the conventional insult, only to pull up short by saying the conclusion, the fire of hell. So what Jesus is trying to do, he's trying to shock them and say, you know, you think that the murder is bad, but actually where did it start? It started with contempt in somebody's heart towards that person, which resulted in anger. And you are no better whether or not you've acted out on that murder or whether you're holding that anger in your heart in the contempt for that person. Thanks for that, Lord. Now, the whole thing about the fire of hell, like we think that it's the word Gehenna. And let me show you, we have kind of images like this. You know, that's hell. You know, we think of it in the future, it's heaven and hell, and it's all those. Or maybe the next one, which is like Dante's Inferno, which is a well-known piece of art that people know about and whatever the case is. But actually, Gehenna, if you can give me the next slide, is actually a place on the south side, the south valley of Jerusalem. And it was a place where, if you go into the text in the Bible, they used to sacrifice children to other gods. They would throw dead carcasses there of animals and all kinds of stuff. They would throw their rubbish. And then ultimately, the sulfur and everything would catch a light and it would just kind of burn. So it became an image, or gave us a metaphor of what hell would look like into the future. And Jesus uses that. So this is probably more of what it would look like. Obviously, this is a kind of a modern-day rubbish dump, but just on fire, dead bodies, smell. Just, it was a terrible place to be. And so he's describing that. But isn't it interesting that he says, he's not talking about the future, is he? He's not saying you will be in danger of the fire of hell. He's saying, no, you are, right now. So hell, we think hell is always something in the future, but we can actually live outside the kingdom of God now in a place of hell in our lives, in the discontent, in the anger, and the seething rubbish in our lives, that we live in a rubbish dump in our lives because that's where our heart is and that's how we treat people. If you want that text, it's Chronicles 28:1, Ahaz, who sacrifices his kids and puts them in that place. So, it's important to understand that the trajectory of our lives right now, where you are now, the decisions that you make right now, the trajectory into eternity, the way you are living right now will determine the way that you live in the future. No, Gary, but I'm saved, and when I get there, everything's going to change. No. No, there are rewards in heaven. Yes, you will be with Jesus. Yes, you will be in eternity with him. But if you are living out a life right now that you are closing off parts of your heart and not allowing God to deal with it, guess what? That you take that into heaven with you. No, no, Gary, that's not the way. That's not grace. It's the truth. Because why do some people, do you think, like we go, you know, you have people who have this ultimate reconciliation. Everybody's going to land up in heaven one day. That's not true. Go read the Bible. And they twist the text to make it sound like that. But if somebody is not worshiping God right now, don't you think heaven's going to be the worst possible place for them ever? Why would they want to then start to worship God when they don't choose to worship him here? And so now to put them into a place where Jesus is king, where we stand there worshiping him 24/7, and there's this amazing thing, they're going to hate it. Because there's no secularism, that word there. And there's no more pantheism. There's no more atheism. There's no more, no, Jesus is there. You don't need faith anymore. He's right in front of you. His light is the thing that's keeping us and holding us. So now all of a sudden you think, well, oh, those poor people. No, they don't want to be there. They've chosen not to be there. In the same way, when we make decisions, the trajectory of your life, if you don't deal with those things in your heart, God has got rewards and treasures and everything available for you. Go read that. It's not just in one place. And so whatever decisions we are making now will determine how we live out our eternity. Yes, saved. Yes, in God's presence. Yes, all of those things. But God's got way more for us, for those who walk through these things and deal with these things. And they're just not this miserable experience in heaven one day. C.S. Lewis says, hell is the greatest monument of human freedom. Dallas Willard, I took it out of my notes, but I feel to say it. Dallas Willard quotes, hell is actually just the best thing that God had for some people. Those are quite harsh comments, aren't they? So, the implication, the point that I'm trying to make, is the implication of the danger of hellfire is not a future thing, it's a now thing. Jesus is not speaking about all that future stuff that I've spoken about, but what he is saying is how do we eliminate the sarcasm and contempt in our lives because we've allowed the orge to take a hold of our hearts and we've bricked up parts of our hearts and we're not dealing with the things in our lives. So, okay, great. Thanks very much, Lord. You know, so I may not land up murdering somebody physically, but I may murder them with my mouth and with my tongue and what I say to them. So now, how do we do this? I mean, thanks. I tell you what, let's try really hard not to get angry this week. Why don't you come with me and we'll try really hard not to get angry. Exactly. Good luck with that. Maybe you'll get 3% better and by Thursday that'll be gone and you'll probably be worse than what you were. I know this week coming up, I know this thing's going to pop. There's a big boil in this context of my work situation and I know that there's going to be pus flying around. And I know that I've got to say, okay, God, I'm not going to get angry and I'm not going to allow anger to set the agenda and how I deal with this. That doesn't mean I don't speak the truth in love. And I don't hold people accountable for what they've said and what they have not done. But for me to stand there and to honor the person and not demolish their character just to get my way because I can, because that's what the way the world works. So, let's have a quick look. Dad, give me, you know I like my models and I'm kind of, so that's what happens. Your will is thwarted. Anger starts up. But why? Because your ego is, my ego was wounded. Like, how can you not pay me? I've worked hard for you guys. I've given you stuff. I've saved you millions of dollars. And my ego is wounded now. And now, do I deal with it? Because if you deal with it right away, yes, you can get angry. But okay, God, let me deal with it. Whew. Thumos, deal with it, gone. But now if you don't deal with it, what happens is you become the self-righteous victim. Because why do we stay angry? Because of self-righteousness. We think we're better than. We think the other person, yeah, the pride, the whole thing of vanity. Well, I'm better than that person because I know, and I, you know what, he is totally at fault here. No, I'm pretty sure that in the process of communication, there's been some breakdowns that have been misinterpreted or whatever the case is. And so what do? Do I now use my anger to rectify that and retaliate with my anger to get what I want? You see, many of us, including us in this room, we don't take responsibility for our stuff and where we've actually messed up. It's one of the biggest problems in this world today. It's always everyone else's problem. And we write people off quite easily, don't we? Once they've hurt us, just go away. I don't want you a part of my life. And so what happens is we land up in this place now where we play it over and over. We're a self-righteous victim, and that orgy starts. We carry it around, and contempt starts to rise up within us, and we think we're better than, and we become these religious bigots and snobs. And we start to not just write off people's behavior, but we start to write off people themselves. Sorry for this amazing preach this morning that's uplifting. It's coming. And then, like I've said, it starts to leak out of our mouths, and we start to speak, and we start to do our Facebook rants and all of those kind of things. I've defriended a lot of people this year. Those who do those Facebook rants, I just unfollow. No, thank you. I don't need to hear that in my life. If you've got an issue, go to the person. Don't talk about somebody on Facebook. And you know what happens? Ultimately, we land up harming who? Other people and yourself. Why? Because you've got your own heart that you've bricked off that part of your life or that part of the stuff to God and to others. And ultimately, yeah, you'll end up either with some domestic violence or some kind of other thing because you allow your anger just to get bigger and bigger and bigger. When I was at Deloitte and we played soccer on a Sunday, and I was only doing soccer. I wasn't exercising anywhere else. And like I've said, the swimming pool for me is my psychologist. I love getting in there, just swimming and allowing the blood to flow and whatever the case is. And I used to go and play soccer on a Sunday with the Deloitte team. And the stresses throughout the week, you arrive there and you're stressed. And there are some real Muppets that you play against. And the problem is that if you don't deal with those anger, then what happens in those moments, you can say, like most of you know me. Not many of you have seen me get angry. My wife's seen me get angry. I think Dell has once or twice. And my parents. And I'm generally quite a consistent guy, and I've received kind of compliments around that. But actually, there's something inside of you. There's that thing. Like somebody pushes that button. It's kind of a red button. When you push it, and it's ugly. But I've actually got a thing within the thing. There's a purple button inside the red button that if somebody pushes, it's ugly. And in that day, there was a guy, and the context was I knew this guy from my swimming days, and he was a Muppet. Not a fool, just a Muppet. And he was a guy I didn't really connect with and whatever else. And he was in defense. I was playing attack. And every time a ball went through, he would call, offsides, offsides. And like after a while, you're going, really, bro? Just come on. So one of the other guys in the second half just said to him, why don't you shut up, man? And the guy, oh, you this and you that. I said, no, honestly, shut up. He says, come make me. The purple button got pushed. But now afterwards, you sit there and you say, well, okay, so I'm the Christian oak. Yeah, and I almost broke my hand. You know, in the movies, when somebody punches somebody in the face, it looks amazing. But actually, afterwards, you go, that doesn't work. And yeah, the guy was an attorney, by the way. So of course, accountants playing attorneys. That was the first problem. But the point is part of me, after a while, I realized I was wrong. Like, I can justify this in any way. And in many ways, like the real South African thing in me, oh, gave him a smack, eh? But God started to speak to me, and I called this guy up. I said, I know you're playing on Sumi. And I said, and you should. I said, but I was wrong, and I'm apologizing for what I did, because what I did was wrong. No qualification. And you know what happened? The whole situation just disappeared, both in my heart and I don't know about his. But he's an attorney, so who knows? So, verse 23. Therefore, now Jesus says, okay, here, this is how you deal with it. I'm coming to land. If you are offering your gift at an altar, And there remember that your brother or sister has something against you. Notice that. You haven't sinned against somebody. Somebody else feels that you've sinned against them and they know that they've got something against you. That word something is the word ti in Greek. It's a small little ti. It's a small little, small thing that somebody may have against you, a something. Leave your gift there in front of the altar. Go first to reconcile with them and then come back and give your offering as a gift. Okay, now that sounds, oh, cool. So I want to address two things. Number one, Jesus is preaching in the Sea of Galilee. It's 120 kilometers away from Jerusalem where the altar is. So think about this. You walked all the way, three days, 4 days worth of travel. You got there. You're about to go give your offering and God says, whoa, Gary, that little thing you've got against Louise or that little thing you got against Glenn, you need to go sort it out. Oh, okay, Lord. Tie your goat that you've brought to that thing. Walk back 4 days. Oh, babe, I'm so sorry. I did that and I did that and I know you were wrong, but no, I'm teasing. Look, I confess my sin against you. Da, 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 da. Okay, let me go back 4 days, 3 days. Go and give my offering. That's what he's saying. How many of us do that? How many? And now we go, oh, that's just like, oh, you've come to church this morning, so you're at the altar. God starts to speak to you. Oh, gee, I need to sort that out. No, no, isn't work worship? So now you're in your work environment and you've got a colleague who's done something. In my case, I've got somebody who, a supplier that I'm working for. Now I tried. Friday morning, I texted him. I said, my friend, let's get together for a cup of coffee. I can understand there's being misunderstanding. I think we can sort this out. Has there been a response? No. But I've done what I can. My posture before this is reconciliation. Be reconciled. And if the word reconciled is can be interpreted, go and make friends with. We don't do that though, do we? And we say, oh, well, let's just put it down to, we get all spiritual about it. It's only in church when God speaks. No, no, you arrive there early one morning and you unpack your laptop and you open it up and God says, oh, Mr. X or Mrs. Y, they did that and you're struggling with it. Go and speak to them. Go be reconciled. But I've got to get up and I've got to have the courage. Yes. Why? Because otherwise you land up with orge and you're in danger of the fire of hell. What God is trying to tell us is that our relationship with him is wrapped up in our relationship with each other and with other people. Not just within this community, but at our work, etc., with our family, with colleagues, with all of those things. And if we don't deal with these things, then, and we need to deal with it quickly. It says, go deal with it quickly. And then lastly, verse 25, settle matters quickly with your adversary who is taking you to court. Do it while you are still on your way, obviously on your way to court. Or your adversary may hand you over to the judge, and the judge may hand you over to the officer, and you may be thrown in prison. Truly, I tell you that you will not get out until you have paid every last penny. Now, in the context of that particular time, is if you had a debt that you owed and you didn't pay it, somebody could take you to court, and if you didn't pay it, you were thrown into prison. Now, the problem is, how do you pay your debt because you're in prison? So now you had to make sure that you had family and friends around, number one, who were either wealthy or were going to work for you to get you out of prison. Otherwise, you died there. That was the thing of the day. So Jesus is saying, for goodness sake, don't go down that road. Rather, reconcile now, deal with it so that you can deal with it quickly. Deal with conflict quickly. One of my unhelpful things is I don't deal with conflict quickly. It's been my history. God is starting to, in my Enneagram thing, when stress starts and where there's conflict, I become the peacemaker rather than dealing with it. And I'm learning to deal with that. And it's hard because I know that when you push those little buttons on other people, it starts to explode and then you get angry because they don't see what you're seeing. And I know that as this process unfolds with my work situation, is I know that I'm going to be accused. There's going to be drive-by shootings. That's always what happens. Okay, God. Thermos, okay. Orge, no. I'm not going to carry this around with me. I'm not going to allow this to fester. And I'm not allowed that when that moment comes, I'm going to leave it and leave it and leave it. And then when I do it, I'm bringing the kitchen sink and all my emotional irrationalism into that process. Deal with it quickly. I'm so grateful for the wife that I have. Because Louise, she pulls it out of me. What's wrong? No, nothing. Are you cross with me? No. Are you this? No. And until she got the right thing, I wouldn't own up that affected really, yeah, no. No, I'm disappointed in you. Oh, why didn't you say so? I asked you. No, you didn't. You asked me if I was angry with you. Exactly. Hopefully I'm growing up. Not quite there yet, but at least can't we be open to conflict discussions to say, actually, hold on a second. Let's have honest dialogue about this. We may not agree on it at the end of the day. I'm sure this guy's not going to agree on my perspective, and I'm not going to agree on his perspective. But hey, let's sort the thing out. Let's deal with it so we can move forward in our relationship together. The one thing is, we're always going to have conflict in a relationship. Anybody who's married knows that. One of the things that Louise knows, and I can promise you, if you, I know we've got visitors here today, but if you were part of this church, one thing is, I promise you I'm going to sin against you. Not that I want to, but I will. I'll say something, I will hurt you, I will do something, either unintentionally and sometimes even intentionally, because I'm a little baby and insecure and have my own issues. But the other thing I can promise you is, if you come to me, I will repent quickly. Can we create a community that repents quickly, that doesn't stay offended, that moves on? Otherwise, what it does is those breakings in relationships, we don't go forward and we don't live the kingdom that God has for us. So, some of you might say, no, there's a place for anger to resolve conflict. I'm going to challenge you on that. Actually, didn't Jesus say that, no, persistent love? Did he come and get angry? Yeah, with the religious guys he did. But did he deal with our sin through anger? No, he didn't. He dealt with it through love. Because of his great love for us, a God who is rich in mercy made us alive in Christ, even when we were dead in our transgressions and sins. So Nietzsche, Dad, if you can put this up, there's a quote from him. He says, battle not the monsters, lest you become a monster. And if you gaze into the abyss gazes also with you. What's he saying? He's saying, if you use violence and you use anger to get your way, guess what? You'll become that monster yourself. That's really all he's saying. And you know what? Our souls become crushed and deformed when we use anger as a mechanism to get what we want once our wills have been thwarted. So, how do we ultimately deal with this? Is right from the beginning, Jesus said, blessed are those. If you don't have a high value of another person's soul in the kingdom of God, you're going to want to crush them through your anger and use anger to get your way when your will is thwarted by them. Blessed. If we have that understanding, then we don't try and manage or justify our anger, which some people will do. Yeah, but they deserve that. Well, maybe they did deserve it, but it's not the kingdom way. If we want to go beyond the righteousness of the Pharisees and the scribes, then we need to follow the way of Jesus. And a kingdom heart values the souls of other human beings. So, instead of devaluing people, instead of allowing our contempt to come in, we can regard the soul of another. And in that process, instead of using anger, we can set aside this because people are worthy, people are loved, people are cherished, and we can honor them, and we can seek reconciliation with them and become friends with them. I don't know whether this guy will ever respond to me again. That's up to him. That's on him. But can I stand in a posture to reconcile at any point that he responds? Yes. The people in your lives, we're going to go into a place of worship and ministry for 20 minutes. Where have you blocked up your heart? Where is the rising cesspool in your heart towards somebody else? Maybe it's somebody in this community. It says there, you have to walk back to Jerusalem. So we'll see you in about, no, I'm teasing. But you know what I'm trying to say. It's actually, instead of giving your offering of praise and worship to God, deal with that now. And maybe they're not here, but deal with it now. Make a choice to actually walk that road. Get onto that journey. It's not easy. Sometimes it's going to take years, sometimes decades, sometimes it'll never happen. What God's asking us to be as a community is one whose posture is towards the high value of another soul and not allowing our anger to destroy them and to destroy ourselves.